in your brain, you're in the Nerd's Domain. Come on in, it's about to begin.
Hey everybody, this is Matt from the Nerd's Domain, and we are at Gen Con 50. Right now we're here at the Cosmos booth talking about their games with Andy. And Andy, you've got Exit. It's an award-winning game. I hate the word it won, I can never get out correctly, so I'll let you say it.
It's the Kennerspiel des Jahres, so the German connoisseur's game of the year.
Okay, and so is that out now?
Yeah, so we have three versions of Exit out right now. There's the Abandoned Cabin, the Secret Lab, and the Pharaoh's Tomb. Each one is sort of a different theme. So like in the Pharaoh's Tomb, you're traveling through Egypt on a tour and you get locked in a burial chamber of a pyramid. The door is closed, you've lost your party, and you have to try and figure out how to get out by solving a series of riddles.
And so these are all your basic escape room games, but in a very unique fashion.
Yes, exactly. Okay. There's some very surprising things. I don't want to say too much without giving any spoilers, but I think you'll be very surprised when you play the game that, wow, I never even thought that was possible.
And you also have new ones coming out as well. I'm looking at the boxes with the big coming soon on them. Are the new ones, or these are already out?
No, so these three new ones, so there's the Forbidden Castle, the Forgotten Island, and the Polar Station that are all coming out around November 1st, probably a little bit earlier than that. Should be no later than November 1st. And then we should have at least four more titles next year in two releases, two and two, spring and fall.
And you guys are releasing a ton of games right now. The information I got was nine, but I was told that was wrong. More than nine that have gone out this year, right?
Yeah, it was nine, so it's definitely more now. We've added some late releases to the year, like Ken Follett has a new book coming out called The Column of Fire. So it's a follow-up to it's the final in his trilogy of, started with the Pillars of the Earth, and then A World Without End, and now A Column of Fire is the third book in that series, and we're releasing a board game almost simultaneously with the book release, which might be the first time that that's ever happened.
Okay.
Yeah. We also have the third and last installment in the Legends of Andor series called The Last Hope, and then... I think that's it for all the late releases. But then we have the other nine releases that we announced this year. So that includes Exit. It includes Magomag, which is a new game from Klaus and Benjamin Teuber.
Okay.
There's four children's games we came out with. Some really fun children's games like Harry Hopper and Monster Trap and Lagoonies. And then from our strategy game line, we have Brutal Kingdom, which is an awesome, beautifully illustrated... card game.
Okay.
Beautiful. And we have these play mats that we made for Brutal Kingdom, and then we also have a special play mat that we made for Lost Cities, the card game.
Okay.
For the first time. Yeah.
So several games from you guys, lots of stuff going on. Anything else you want to highlight about Cosmos or about the stuff that's coming out?
So one of my favorite games that we came out with this year is a game called Word Slam.
Okay.
Word Slam is a party game. It's for three or more players. Honestly, the more the better.
Okay.
You basically set up in two teams, and each team assigns a storyteller for each round. And that storyteller is responsible for getting their teammates to guess a particular word that only the two storytellers on opposing teams know.
Okay.
And the way you do that is by placing cards down. So it's sort of like charades, but instead of acting out what you want people to guess, you have to tell a story with cards that have one word on them.
Okay.
You have 105 cards to choose from, and each team has the same cards to pick from, or two of the parallel decks to choose from.
Okay.
It's really awesome because there's this great dynamic when like one team is guessing and the other team is guessing, and you hear what they're guessing, and I'm, as a storyteller, putting down different clue cards based on the guesses that I'm hearing from both teams, and
okay.
The only thing you're allowed to do is place cards and then point to the cards.
Okay.
It's pretty cool.
So, yeah, a little bit like charades, a little more hectic, it sounds like.
Definitely more hectic, yeah.
Excellent.
Very fun. All right.
So you guys have a large library of games to pick from, and they go for everything from kids' games to party games to serious strategy games in between, so a little bit of everything, right?
That's right, yeah, for sure.
Okay. Excellent. Anything else you want to hit on? Any more releases this year that we haven't mentioned?
I don't think so. Nothing new.
Certainly not.
That hasn't been mentioned.
Okay. Excellent.
That's it.
All right, well, that will do us today for the Nerd's Domain podcast, and we will talk to you guys real soon. Hey everybody, it's Matt. I'm here at Gen Con 50 with Perrine Shaw from Peaceful Kingdoms. We're going to be talking about a couple of games. Let's start with Mole Rat Kingdoms. Tell me about what it is, who designed it, kind of a little bit of everything.
Yeah, so Mole Rats in Space is our big new release this year. Super excited about it. It's designed by Matt Leacock. I'm sure all the gamers out there will know about Matt's games like Forbidden Island, Pandemic, and others. So super excited to work with Matt. This is among his youngest games. It's among our oldest games. So Mole Rats in Space, the basic premise here is we've got four mole rats. Mole rats are among the most cooperative animals in the animal kingdom, so that's why we've got them as the theme of our game. And this is a cooperative game, so everyone's working together to defeat the game instead of each other. So our four naked mole rats are manning our space station. Everything is all good and fine until their only natural predator, the mole rat, arrives on the space station. And that's where our game takes off. We've got to get our four mole rats into the escape pod before the station is overrun by snakes. The game is very loosely based on Snakes and Ladders, Chutes and Ladders, in that you move up ladders and down chutes on our way to the escape pod. Along the way, we've got to pick up four super important devices, a turnip, because that's their favorite food, a map, duct tape, because you can't escape a space station without duct tape, of course, and a toothbrush, because they've got these huge, nasty teeth. Along the way, we're trying to evade snakes. There's various ways we could lose the game, only one way we could win the game, and we all have to work together to win. It's age 7 plus, but I've played this game with all adults, and adults have had a great time playing it.
Yeah, and it is the board itself is very reminiscent of Chutes and Ladders, but still very unique in its own right. Yep. What's the price point on this?
This is $19.99, $20. Everything we make is under $20.
Okay, and this is already available out and ready to go?
Yep.
It's just a matter of getting it from whatever store they get it from.
Yep, your independent toy store, Amazon, Barnes & Noble, a whole slew of places.
Okay, and you guys are specifically a younger crowd game company.
That's right. We make games for kids aged 2 to 7 and primarily cooperative games. That's really kind of what we focus on. We believe in making games that inspire cooperation and cultivate kindness. And that's what we want to come through in all of our games. And, it's a growing market and there's a lot of opportunity there.
Right. So you're going to be the gateway for kids to start now playing games
yep.
that aren't just your Monopolies and your Chutes and Ladders that make them think a little bit more outside the box.
Yep. And we're driving these skills like cooperation, like working together, communication. In a game like Mole Rats in Space, you simply can't win if you don't work together. So we're driving some skills in a fun, lighthearted way that ultimately are good for everyone. It's good for society. If people can work to learn to work together more, then we all win.
Absolutely. So tell us a little bit about some of your other games. What else do you have out that you'd say is notable or newer that you'd want to touch on?
Yeah, as far as notable, our best-selling game of all time is Hoot Owl Hoot. Great cooperative game. It's for age 4 plus. Really simple gameplay. You're trying to get seemingly simple gameplay. You're trying to get owls into the nest before the sun comes up, but there's actually strategy involved. A game called Race to the Treasure is also a top seller that's been out for about 5 years. You're building a path from start to end and trying to avoid the ogre along the way. So those are really kind of our more notable games. This year, in addition to Mole Rats in Space, we launched a line of games for two-year-olds. So all the parents out there who have got two-year-olds know that there aren't a whole lot of games out there for that age group. So we really wanted to create high-quality, fun, quick interactions that parents can have with kids. And it's resulted in three games, Monkey Around, which we call our Wiggle and Giggle game, Where's Bear, which is the thinking, finding, searching game, and Bunny Bedtime, which is the wind down, quiet down, end of evening game. Okay. So we're really excited about the two-year-old games, and we're looking forward to launching more of those as the years go on.
Excellent. We can find you guys on your website. What is that?
PeaceableKingdom.com. You can find us on Facebook at Peaceable K. And then, of course, we're on Amazon at your independent toy stores and a number of national retailers, including Barnes & Noble, Cost Plus, World Market, and others.
Excellent, excellent. So definitely want to check out Mole Rats in Space. I think it looks fantastic. It's bright. It's colorful. It's a new take on something pretty solid for most of us that we grew up playing Chutes and Ladders. Plus, the mole rats look ridiculous, and there's snakes. I love everything about it.
Thank you.
Definitely want to check that out, and you can find them, again, at PeaceableKingdom.com and on Facebook at Peaceable K.
Yep.
All right. Hey, everybody. I'm Matt, and I'm here at Gen Con 50. We're at the Shapeways booth with Andrew and Ian to talk about Shapeways and what they're doing right now and what they're doing with gaming, which I think is phenomenal. So, Andrew, why don't you tell us a little bit about Shapeways, what you guys have been doing, and what you do as a whole?
Sure. So my name is Andrew Thomas. I am a community manager for Shapeways. And Shapeways is a 3D printing service and marketplace where we take digital content and turn that into physical products. Okay. So we have high-end industrial 3D printers. We can print in 60 different materials and just create pretty much anything you want, which is very useful for gamers, role players, war gamers, any pretty much anything, cosplay. But yeah, we're here showing off some of the incredible things that our community makes. Okay. And Ian is one of those community members.
So you, Ian, you make what? What do you make?
I make a variety of things, but I'm primarily known for making dice. I use the internet moniker Envenomate, capital N, lowercase word, venom numeral 8. Yeah, I know, I was a kid when I made it. But point is, I make dice that people really like and they seem to gravitate towards, so that's cool. I love seeing people here and they say, oh, I saw your design on Reddit, and I'm like, yes, cool.
Okay, and so Shapeways, where did you guys start? Because like, it's not just the 3D printing. What kind of got you guys? What started the company in that direction?
The company. So our founder Peter Weimerhausen started the company in the Netherlands as a spinoff of Philips. They were in an innovation incubator, and he was interested in creating a service that could offer 3D printing at a reasonable price. Mm-hmm. Eventually, spun out, moved to New York. And now we have a factory in Long Island City, New York, and another factory in the Netherlands, and we ship and create parts for all over the world.
Okay. So I bought, like 10 ships years ago from one of the guys there. Loved them because I wanted to play a game. But you guys are really focusing on gaming now, not just dice, but, bits for Warhammer 40K and minis. What all are we looking at there? Yeah.
So, kind of from a community standpoint, we've been really interested in finding the things that groups of people like and are excited about and have a need for customization. And because that's what's powerful about 3D printing is that you can customize, you can make things totally unique. You can make stuff that no one's ever thought of before or maybe what didn't make sense to mass manufacture before. So for gamers, people love to customize. They love to have unique, really cool stuff. And that's what we're offering. So yeah, you have things like Ian's dice that are just incredible works of art. You have customizing and conversion bits for things like 40K. So people, you know, who want to have their own Space Marine faction or something that they created themselves, they can create a picture and put that on, and now you have your army looking really cool. You have wargamers that. You know, you can make something like your ships, right? Like you have a game, but it doesn't necessarily have the right pieces. But there's an artist out there that's already created those pieces for you because they have the similar vision. And so that's kind of what it's really about is people who are fans of games and people who love to play games being able to connect with each other. And sometimes people have great design skills, and so they want to share that with the rest of the hobby community.
Excellent. So talking about design skills, like you're obviously a designer, how did you get started and how easy is it to work with Shapeways?
Well, so I actually got started working with 3D software and the like back when I was working in a planetarium in undergrad doing digital animation, which is why the program that I use most often is actually Maya, which is more geared toward animation and rendering than it is toward just making models. It's probably really excessive for what I'm doing, but it's what I know and so it's what I've stuck with. A few years ago, I got a set of Chuck Stover's dice as a gift, actually, his Thorn dice. You would know him as Ceramic Wombat. And it's probably the most famous dice set out there right now, at least if you add the word 3D printed. I think if you Google dice, it's like the third entry. But I got it as a gift, and I had known about Shapeways, and I was really fascinated by the build quality on the pieces and loved the finish and everything. And it became one of those things where every time I would pull these out at a game, people would ask me where I got them and what are they and how do they work. And I would be like, oh, you know, they were 3D printed by this service called Shapeways. And at some point it clicked with me, wait a minute, I know 3D stuff and Shapeways can print 3D stuff. why don't I try and make these work together? And sure enough, I ended up making a model. I actually messaged the artist who made my dice, Chuck, through the service, and he messaged me back with some advice, which was super nice. And at the end of it, I had my first model done, which was the Elvish D20. And since then, it's been very easy to work with them. Their tools have done nothing but improve over the years. Their ability to produce my designs never ceases to amaze me. And their willingness to work with us as artists and treat us like a community with some respect and like actually take our ideas into consideration, I'm blown away by Shapeways, really. Their business model is pretty cool.
Yeah, I did find it interesting that you guys have providers here. Like, this isn't just like, this isn't Shapeway employees running a Shapeway booth. This is Shapeway employees promoting the stuff that the providers are providing.
Absolutely, yeah, and that's sort of been my goal. I want they're the ones who make this happen. You know, they're creating their designs, and I'm here to help amplify that, help support it. Help, you know, get people the visibility, or you know, put people in a situation where they can share what they're doing that you might not have been able to do because we all have other bills to pay and you know, time that we have to do things, and you know, getting a booth at Gen Con costs a lot. So you know, that's what we want to offer is the support and the ability for the community to grow and kind of feed off of that and, and keep building. Yeah.
So, if people wanted to find Shapeways, where we find it website-wise and in social media?
Yep. So, we are shapeways.com, and you know, you'll find all the information there. You can go search the marketplace. You could upload something. You can go to our forums and talk to people. On social, at Shapeways. We're on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, Pinterest. That covers those media.
Okay.
I am at Athometron on those things. Ian's, he already said his username. I think you have the same username for everything.
Yeah,
right?
So it's some variant on the same username for everything. On Shapeways itself, it's shapeways.com/shops/envenomate, spelled the way I said before. Twitter, it's envenomate_designs. And on Reddit, which is the only thing I ever really use regularly, it's just Envenomate.
Okay.
Facebook, you can search Envenomate Designs. I don't actually remember what the URL is. You'll find it.
Excellent. And this is excellent. So you guys have tons of things. That's honestly the only downside I found to Shapeways is there's too much. There's so many things to look at.
There's a lot of stuff. It's incredible.
So, definitely check them out. I love Shapeways. I'm very happy with my ships. I actually pulled them out when I realized I had this interview. I pulled them out of the box.
Are they here?
I feel like they're too fragile. I don't like carrying around minis
and babies,
So, but you guys design in 60 different materials.
Yeah, I say 60, and it's probably like 59 or 61. You know, like I think it is 60.
But
it changes a lot. So.
That includes metal as well.
That includes metal. So we do different types of plastic. So strong flexible plastic, frosted ultra detail, high definition acrylate, really detailed plastics that are. Resin cast quality, and then we do metals. So we do different types of steel. We do silver,
brass. Yeah.
We do gold, platinum. If you're really, really, really loaded.
Which all of them look really great in the dice.
Yep.
Like they look fantastic.
Yeah. And metal dice are the thing. Metals. It's just. Dice are metal. Dice are rock and roll, you know?
Once you hit the jewelry quality metals, especially with the dice, if it's anything with the really intricate designs like I tend to do, the detail all just pops.
Oh, okay. Excellent. All right. Well, thank you guys for being on, and thank you guys for listening, and we will talk to you real soon.
Hi, I'm here with...
Nathan Hatfield.
Can you tell me a bit about your company?
I'm the chief sales officer for Gamelan Games. We're most notably known for our hit series, Tiny Epic. We're debuting Tiny Epic Quest here at Gen Con, sold out day one, and so we've had more games air freighted in. So it's going very, very well.
Can you tell me a little bit about that game?
Yeah, absolutely. So Tiny Epic Quest is the sixth installment in the Tiny Epic series. And Tiny Epic Quest is a sandbox-style adventure. And what that means is you're going to have many different paths to victory. And those paths to victory are going to provide victory points. You're going to play over the course of five rounds. Most victory points wins. Tiny Epic Quest, the board is going to be modular, so it'll be set up different each time. So each time that you play the game, you're going to be presented with a different positional puzzle that you're essentially trying to solve. Because you will have three heroes that you're going to want to get from point A to point B, you know, and point A to point B, and such and such. And to do that, there will be limited movement actions that can be taken. So you'll have to be very efficient and strategic on how to get your heroes everywhere so that you have them all doing something in the night phase of the round, which actually introduces a pressure luck element. So everybody gets set up, night phase hits, and there's actually going to be dice that are rolled, and you'll be able to accomplish your task that you set yourself up for, or you can bust and lose all of your progress. And so you're going to have to be strategic when to stay and when to not.
Nice.
Yeah.
Well, I see there seems to be some variants to it, like Western.
Yeah.
Do they all play similar, or are they...
Yeah, so with Tiny Epic, actually, all of the games in the series are as different as Ticket to Ride would be to, say, Carcassonne.
Yeah.
Yeah, what ties them together is their small form factor and how much experience is inside of that box. But Tiny Epic Western is going to be a completely different playset, completely different mechanics and everything than something like Tiny Epic Quest would be.
Nice.
Yes.
So I see a large box in front of us. Can you tell me a bit about Heroes of Land, Air, and Sea?
Yes, so Heroes of Land, Air, and Sea go in the exact opposite direction of Tiny Epic. But Heroes of Land, Air, and Sea, same designer of Tiny Epic, same development team of Tiny Epic. So you're going to get a lot of the spirit of that. You know, streamlined concepts, it doesn't overstay its welcome, you know, not too complicated to teach to other players, but give you a huge, massive 4X robust experience, 30 minutes a player. So we're talking 2 hours for a four-player game. You know, you're not going to have to waste your weekend, you know, playing Heroes.
Yeah.
You know, unless you play back-to-back games like we like to do. So.
Nice.
But it's the core game comes with 80 highly detailed miniatures. The miniatures are all their own unique faction colors. So your orcs, elves, humans, and dwarves battling for supremacy. But also this game includes. And I'm just opening up a pre-production copy here. I know you can't see it. the Heroes of Land, Air, and Sea. It comes with cardboard constructs. And so cardboard constructs in this game, you will be taking your miniatures, actually placing them in a cardboard construct boat, and sailing from your continent to the other continents to wage war. There's no imagining your units in these vessels. They are inside of the vessels.
Nice. There's no arguing about how many people can fit in one boat or how many...
Right. Nice. Vessels can hold 2 units per vessel.
And it looks like each faction has their own variants.
Yes, yeah. Yes. It's a completely asymmetrical game. There's 8 different factions between the base game and the expansion. And all the factions combined have over 240 unique abilities.
Yeah, and I also like the fact that you just opened a box. All the constructs are constructed... And it still fits in the box.
Yes, that was something that was very important for us. And this actually has all of the promo stuff in it as well.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, so all of the promo and the constructs constructed all fit back in the box.
So do you have anything planned for the future that you can talk about?
Yeah, so more Tiny Epic first and foremost. We're going to be actually revamping and releasing a second edition of Tiny Epic Defenders. Tiny Epic Defenders is a wonderful cooperative game in the series, but we're completely redoing all of the art, all of the graphic design, and really retooling a lot of creature abilities, really making things more dynamic.
Nice.
You know, we've grown quite a ways as a development team and publishing team, you know, since the original Tiny Epic Defenders.
Yeah.
But we're going to couple that with an expansion called the Dark War. We're going to introduce a campaign mode. We're going to introduce cross-class capabilities. And so it's going to be a lot of fun.
Nice. Well, is there any conventions you're coming to other than Gen Con 50 where people can come and see this stuff in person?
Absolutely. So the next convention we're going to be at is Essen Spiel. So if you get the fortunate ability to make it over to Germany, best convention in the world. But then we'll be at BGG Con as well this year.
Nice.
And BGG Con, we will have all of our great Tiny Epic titles, and we'll have heroes there available as well, and also to see, and then also, you know, farther along, you know, copies of Defenders and such. So,
nice.
And we may have announced another Tiny Epic by that time. Who knows?
Yeah. So where can people find you on social media?
Yeah, absolutely. So we are very active on our Facebook, and that's facebook.com/GameLandGames, but also on Twitter at @Gameland_Games.
Well, thanks a lot.
You're very welcome.
Hi, I'm here with
David Gerard.
Can you tell me a little bit about your company?
Yeah, so Junk Spirit Games is basically, right now it's only a 4-person company. We formed up about a year and a half ago to make great games, right?
Can you tell me some of your products you have?
Yeah, our first game was Junking. We came out with it last year. It was kind of our way of finding out what self-publishing is all about. We made this really small strategic filler game, plays 2 to 6 players. We really enjoy the kind of like whimsical, kind of fun, good-natured art and all the text. We've got really cool flavor text, so it kind of creates this like fun, kind of family-friendly strategic filler game. And we also, our second game that we created, which we're kind of promoting here at Gen Con, is Buyer of the Queen. And Buyer of the Queen was, I would say, our epic level game. It takes about 2 hours to play. In that game, everybody is playing these guilds that are trying to help the queen from keeping the kingdom together. The king's disappeared, feared lost in battle. And all the monsters, when the queen takes over, decide that that's the time to pounce, thinking that she's weak. But she's actually got this really great plan that she has the guilds help her with. And because so many heroes show up to help their queen out, that nobody knows what to do with them all. And so they basically just section them off. And as a guild leader, your job is basically to send the heroes out to either do quests, fight the monsters that threaten the villages of the area, or to complete the queen's plan directly. And so it's a two-player cooperative, fully cooperative game. And so you can lose the game by either running out of villagers, or the confidence of the regions falls apart in the queen, or you could actually run out of heroes directly as well to lose. But if you complete 3 queen's orders before any of those 3 things happens, then you win.
Nice.
Yeah.
So can you tell me a little bit about the differences between doing a small game and a larger, more involved game?
Oh, that's a really good question. So here's what's crazy is we actually made Junking as the way to find out what self-publishing was so we can make the big mistakes. And we made some, trust me. We made those mistakes so that when we get to the bigger and bigger games, we can iron it all out, right? So I would say the major difference is the amount of money we spent on shipping. Holy moly. Yeah, we spent some big money. It was almost 5x, but of course, Junking is about a little bit over a pound, and then Buyer of the Queen's almost 4.5 pounds of game. Yeah,
really?
It's ridiculous, right? So, I mean, it's got 300 plus cards in it, so it's just going to weigh a lot. I would say, obviously that's money, right? But as far as like the difficulty of designing a large game like that, I would say Junking was something that I kind of came up with almost in a weekend. Like, I came with like a base structure, and then working with Justin to kind of like set this really cool theme, it was really easy to kind of lock that stuff together and then start filling out cards in the same way that anybody who plays Magic the Gathering a lot can probably make their own cards. Imagine like understanding that like, oh, 4 mana gives you a 3/3 creature with an ability, right? There was a grid that was easy to control with Junking because it was such a small game. With Buyer of the Queen, any element that you wanted to throw in changes everything because it's this epic long game. And so there's this huge thing where like every playtest cycle was like huge, and we had to go months sometimes where we're just playing the game back to back just to make sure the game doesn't fall apart because we added some small thing, right?
Yeah.
So that translates into time, right?
Yeah.
And I'm glad that we took the time that we did. We kind of did two ends of the spectrum, right? We've got this really small game, and then we've got this really big game. And so now we're just punching and putting more games in the middle there.
Nice. Well, we're at Gen Con 50, and you have a demo of Junking out here.
Yeah.
Are you going to be at any other conventions around anytime soon?
Yeah, so we're doing PAX Unplugged, obviously. Holy moly, it's going to be awesome, right? And then we're from Seattle, so there's so many game conventions in that area. In fact, PAX Unplugged is what, PAX is Unplugged. What's in 2 weeks? Oh, PAX West is in 2 weeks. Then there's another convention between that called Dragonflight. I'll be going to that one. So a lot of small local conventions, I say small, but they're like 600-ish people.
Oh, yeah.
Really, cool and niche-y and really tight communities. And it's awesome to be there, too, because you get a completely different variety of people to talk to. And I always tell people, like, it doesn't matter how much money we spend, I would spend that money just to meet people, right? The meet
exactly.
people I see. So it's great talking to people and getting interviews and talking to, and all that jazz. And so, man, you're going to see us kind of as much as we can be seen. Right?
That's good.
Yeah.
That's good.
Absolutely.
Do you have any games coming out in the future that you can talk about?
Yeah, absolutely. So we're actually showing off Crows. So Tyler Sigmund, if you're familiar, he made Darkest Dungeon, which is a video game on PC and PSN, and soon coming to iPad. Darkest Dungeon kind of just took over the indie gaming scene, and then therefore the whole gaming scene in last year, and really is really super strong. It sold tons of copies. It's such an amazing game. I'm a huge fan. And my huge fan level somehow got me into it. The same room with Tyler when he was telling me about how his game from like 6-7 years ago is no longer in publication, and I was like, wait, hold up, let me play that game. So we played the game, and it really easily sold me on it. It's a very classic feel game, and it's really kind of surprising that it's no longer in publication. So I pitched to him, like, hey, what if we've made it for you? We'll bring up the art, we'll bring up, you know, add some new gameplay elements, we'll bring up the design, make this super high quality product, and he was easily sold. Well, no, I wouldn't say easily, but I got it, right? So yeah, and so it was great. It was great. It's been great working with him. He gave me all the assets, and, you know, the game's great. It's a super great game, and we're looking at probably getting on the Kickstarter probably a couple months from now, I'd say. But then we've got two other games that I'm personally designing that we're working on. One's called Project Echo, which is a two-player asymmetrical cooperative game, which I've been told do not make a two-player cooperative game by most people in the game industry. So I'm like, challenge accepted, let's do this.
It's good that there are some.
Yeah, exactly, right? Yeah. I mean, I've got two-player games I play with my kids, and I'm tired of getting beat up. Nah. Yeah. So I'm looking forward to bringing the cooperative game in. So that's Project Echo. If you'll hear maybe, if you follow us on Twitter, we'll be tagging that. And then we've got another game, doesn't even have a product game yet, that is like a deck builder game, but instead of buying cards and putting them in your own deck, you buy cards and put them in your opponent's deck, and then you essentially fish them out during the course of the game to try to gain points.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. We're trying to get some cool, niche-y, like, game mechanics that, like, really haven't been seen, but it's not... For me, it's not about game mechanics as much as it is like creating that family-friendly environment.
Yeah.
I want to hear stories of people like playing with their kids or playing with their aunts and uncles or cousins or whatever. They're not hardcore gamers and bringing them into the fold, right?
Yeah.
I think that's probably the more interesting story. And so that's kind of like our branding, right? We've got family-friendly games to bring to your table. We're trying to make highly strategic games that you can give to anybody and have them enjoy it.
Nice.
Yeah.
Well, you mentioned the Twitter.
Yes.
Where can people meet you on social media?
Yeah, so I am... So the best way to follow us is... Obviously, we do have I almost said corporate. Like, there's four people. It's not a corporation. The team Twitter is Junk Spirit Games. Very simple, right? All one word. And then you can also follow me, which is going to be a lot more active, obviously. And it's actually just... The first two letters of my first name, which is D-A, and then the first four letters of my last name, which is G-E-R-R. So it's like dagger, but spelled wrong, right? D-A-G-E-R-R.
Yeah.
Yeah, and so if you follow me, probably about a third of the time I talk about games, nice. About my games. And then the other two-thirds, I mostly talk about how I hate Skittles, the new green apple Skittles. They can go to hell.
Really?
They can go to hell.
Never tried it.
I'm on record. Yeah, no, absolutely. And so, but yeah, nothing political. I'm a good guy.
Yeah.
And,
yeah.
But yeah, so you can follow me and you can kind of find out what's going on with us and probably what's going on in the game industry in general, because I'm a huge fan of everything that goes on, right? So,
great.
Absolutely.
Well, thanks a lot.
Yeah, absolutely, man.
Hi, I'm here with
Matt Casebeer.
Can you tell me a bit about your company and your product?
All right, we're Hot Metal Games, and our first card game coming out is Endure the Undying Nights. It's a survivor horror game. But it's not cooperative, it's combative. So you're trying to out-survive everyone else.
Can you tell me a bit about the mechanics?
All right, so in the game, everyone has their own base and a hero that represents themselves. They have a squad of survivors that also are with them. On their turn, they can either scavenge, build, or sabotage the other team if they wish. So you're trying to build your own base to protect yourself from the oncoming horde of monsters. And you're trying to make everyone else's base weaker, so when the onslaught comes to them, they might get overrun and you win. So basically, you're trying to out-survive everyone else. You also have some victory condition cards. There's 10 random ones that get dealt out during the game. Something like building a fallout shelter, or maybe you find the rare orchid that repels all monsters from your base. The rest of the cards get put back into the deck, so when you're going scavenging, you might find other victory cards as you're playing.
Okay, so your victory condition can change.
Exactly, your victory condition change. You can also, or you can just let everyone else die, and then you still survive.
Oh, yeah.
Yes.
So, how many players does it hold?
Right now, it's 2 to 4 is what we're going for. We might be expanding that to 5, just because we can give you 5 hero cards in the original core packaging.
Now, if all 4 people knew how to play the game well, how long does a game typically last?
About 30 minutes to 45 minutes, but I've also had games where if you don't know how to play well, I've died in 5 minutes.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it doesn't take longer.
Normally it takes longer.
Yes. No, this one, you learn it quickly. You'll make mistakes early, and you might die because you have way too many monsters in your base.
Well, you talked about the possibility of adding a 5th player. Do you have plans for future expansions to this game?
We do. So, like, right now, a lot of our monsters are more the creepy, scary, the night-type monsters. We're thinking about adding a bunch of new monsters more around the Road Warrior-type feel to them, and adding some more equipment that gives you that Road Warrior feel, so that might be one of our expansions. We have the idea of adding the zoo expansion, where more of the creatures are monsters based off of the animals and stuff like that. And you might have like zoologists now as heroes versus just having medics and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, is there any other games you're planning on that you can talk about, or is it all kind of secret?
I would say secret, because the one I think is going to be really awesome, but it's really in the early planning stages. So right now we're trying to get this game out there and popular, and then we're going to slowly do some expansions, and maybe in a year we'll be able to talk about the next one.
Nice. Well, we're currently at Gen Con 50. Is there any other conventions where people come and see this in person?
Right now we don't have any plans, because we're in the middle of printing, so we want to get that prints out there, and then we're going to try to figure out where we're going to go next.
Nice. So, social media, how can people find you?
We're on Instagram at Hot Metal Games. That's the best place to see all the updates to our products, and also hotmetalgames.com.
Great. Well, thanks a lot.
Awesome.
Hi, I'm here with
Austin Bennett of Mystic Ape Games.
Can you tell me a bit about your company and your products?
Yeah, absolutely. We're based out of St. Louis, Missouri, and we have two games out right now. One is called Private Die, the other The End Is Nigh. They both play 2 to 6 players in around 15 to 20 minutes.
Nice. Can you tell me some of the mechanics of Private Die?
Yeah, Private Die is a noir-themed game that has press your luck and dice rolling mechanics. And then The End Is Nigh, it is a social deduction game that is based around the pre-apocalypse. An asteroid's going to hit Earth. It hasn't yet, so you're preparing for that.
Nice. Well, can you tell me a bit about how many players it handles?
Yeah, so they both play 2 to 6 players, which is really nice, because especially for a social deduction game like The End Is Nigh, it's really odd to get kind of those low player counts with the games.
Yeah.
And it plays really well with that. So we're super excited for being able to have that. Private Die is great because, along with playing 2 to 6 players, if you have certain like extra promo cards like we're giving out right now, you can always add dice and add players into the game.
Oh, nice.
And the game also scales up and down in complexity, Private Die does. So you can introduce new gamers to the hobby, or you could even make it a little bit more difficult for people who are a bit more advanced.
Nice. So, with the group of people who absolutely know the rules inside and out, about how long is gameplay on them?
The End Is Nigh should only take about 15 minutes, because it's only 12 turns, and a turn can take about a minute or so. So as long as, then again, arguing over suspicions can always increase the gameplay. Private Die, it should usually max out around 20, if there's 20 minutes. If there's a lot more players that you added in, like up to 8 players or something, it could take longer. There's a lot of duck, but there is a definitive end to the game after 18 rounds. So it's not one of those dice games that could theoretically go on forever.
Okay. Well, you mentioned, too, like there's possibly more in the works. Can you talk about anything coming up, or is it all hush-hush?
Oh, no, yeah, absolutely. We are working on a space-themed worker placement that we're looking to put on Kickstarter next year. We're super excited about it. We've demoed it around, actually, if you've heard of Stonemaier Games, which I'm sure you have. At their design day last year, we demoed it, and it placed number 2 out of all the games that were demoed there. The hook of the game is it's a worker placement like Lords of Waterdeep, but each individual worker has a special power. So you can build your team and have them all synergizing powers. You get really a nice, satisfying like power engine building feeling.
Nice. Is there any conventions you guys are going to be at other than Gen Con where people can see you?
I think the next convention we're going to be at is just going to be a local one in St. Louis called Geekway to the West. But it is a phenomenal convention. I believe this year it had around 6,000 attendees, so it's not too small. Not around this size.
Yeah.
But it's a nice regional one, and it's really great. They have a lot of opportunities to play games.
Nice. So social media, where can people find you?
We are on Facebook and Twitter. You can just search us at Mystic Ape Games, and our website is mysticape.com.
Great. Well, thanks a lot.
No, thank you.
Hi, I'm here with
Luke Peterschmidt.
Can you tell me about your company and a bit about your products?
Sure. The company is called Fun to 11. It is owned by myself and Jay Hernishin. We've been in the gaming industry for more than 20 years each. Our line of products started with Miskatonic School for Girls. It's a reverse deck builder, which means I build your deck, and it is still our most popular game to date. It has an expansion as well. We have Castle Dice, a game that appears on many top 10 dice game lists. It is an excellent, excellent Euro game. Not a Euro game where you have to worry about endgame scoring so much so that you don't even know what you're doing halfway through the game the first time you play. Really easy to play down in age all the way to maybe a gamery 10-year-old. Literally never met a person who doesn't like that game. It should be on every gamer shelf. We did Epic PvP. It's a 2-player fighting game that you can play 4 if you want, where you choose a fantasy race and class, like maybe a halfling and a barbarian. And then you shuffle the halfling deck into the barbarian deck, you shuffle them up, and you fight. That game was co-designed by myself and Ryan Miller, who used to be part of Wizard of the Coast R&D staff. So it feels like a collectible card game with a very simple deck-building mechanic. in a way that lets you get into the game very quickly and explore all the combinations of class and race. Very fun. Okay, what else am I missing? I'm looking at my booth now. We've got Fairy Mischief. Fairy Mischief is a game that Jay designed for his daughter to teach his daughter's friends how to be more gamery. So it's a very simple game to start with, and the parent or guardian can add rules from the optional rules list as the kid understands them. So it teaches risk-reward, hand management, all starting from a very familiar position. Really, really proud of that game. We have Flame War, a game designed by Andy Chambers. He's a famous game designer, obviously. Did Warhammer 40K 2nd Edition and 100 other games. And that game is about being an internet forum moderator. All the fun of the internet, except it's actually on cards, so it's actually fun and not hate. And then currently our big game that we're working on is called the JRPG Tabletop Adventure Game. This game is huge. It'll be coming out probably later in this year or early next year on Kickstarter. I'm designing that with Paul Peterson. Paul Peterson designed Smash Up and Guillotine and 50 other great games. Paul's amazing. And that game is a huge co-op where everything cool about JRPGs is in the game. All the way down to there is no rule book for the game. There's no rule book for Final Fantasy.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
You just play it, right? You just play. So you start, you open the script up, and it says, "Good morning, kids. Don't forget, today is the first day of the Beatbird Festival." And then you pick your characters because the game tells you to. And then you get trained by the Weapon Master, and that teaches you combat. And then the first time you meet a monster that sets you on fire, you are introduced to the rules of fire. So it's a very clever, no-rules game. So you can open that game, buy it at a convention, open it, and play it.
Nice.
Additionally, the game sort of has some legacy aspects. It's a game told in three acts. Act 1, Act 2, and Act 3, and there's multiple choices for each of those. Which acts you choose will define the final boss monster you fight. As long as you win all three nights, it's three nights of gaming and a boss fight. If you, let's say, do one Act 1, you might learn about the black market. And that ability in the black market will help you in Act 2 and Act 3. Or maybe you chose the Act 1 that helps you train little monsters to fight with you. You'll have monsters in Act 2 and Act 3. So every experience will be completely different if you go a different route of which three acts to take. Very easy to reload. And it's not a legacy in the way that you sticker things.
Yeah.
Everything is easy to drop back in the envelopes.
Now, is this a cooperative game? Or?
Thank you for asking. Yes.
Good.
It is a cooperative game. And it is a cooperative game for four characters. You could choose to run more than one character. I am telling people, don't. Play this game with four players. I get frustrated with games that say, we're good at 2-4, and you play two-player, and they don't hold up.
Yeah.
So we're just stating it right from the beginning. Four people is the game. And we had to do that because Japanese role-playing games are not like D&D and Pathfinder. In D&D and Pathfinder, right, you make characters from whole cloth you like. In JRPGs, it is the characters of the story that you play. And you can't just drop a character out. You can't, right? Because when you're reading the cutscenes, you got to read for your character.
So I'm a little afraid to ask, but how long does this game take to play, knowing JRPGs?
Well, we do have a mechanic for grinding. But it is a mechanic for grinding. So I go to a spot and I grind. I flip a card, I roll some dice, we're done. And then you have set piece encounters, which are your big key fights. Your big, in the act we're showing here at Gen Con, it's all about someone who's trying to collect murder mushrooms, which don't kill you, for a catering job for a wedding. And it turns out at the end of Act 1, you fight the cake boss. It's a huge cake, right? And it's all possessed and monstrous, right? So the one act, hour and 20 minutes, hour and 30 minutes, it's like a night.
Nice.
That's why we call it three nights of gaming. So now, obviously, if you lose the first big set encounter, you're done.
That's
co-op, and that's what happens. But it's very easy to stop and start. And it is a big game. In the end, I have no idea how big it's going to be. The design is done. Development is ongoing. And one of our very first things we said about this game is we will not say no to an idea due to cost.
Yeah.
Except for miniatures.
Because
I don't believe that my company has the ability to make great miniatures confidently enough, and I'm not going to partner with someone because our company doesn't release games until they are 100% ready. So if this game is out in November this year, it's out in November this year. November next year, these are passion games for us. They're not paying our rent.
Yeah.
So this game, you might go on a side quest, and if someone has a great idea that says, okay, for the side quest, we need an envelope that has a feather, a stopwatch, and a tennis shoe in it. I mean, that's extreme. Obviously, you want it.
Yeah.
But we'll do it. And maybe you pick Axe and you never see that. But that surprise factor of when you get to that, when you finally do, is going to be great.
Yeah.
And that's pretty much where we are with all of our products. And of course, we have our stuffed scarf line, which aren't games, but they're plushes that have scarf stuffed in them, like a unicorn that has a rainbow scarf that comes out of its rainbow scarf area. And a zombie
that
has entrails.
Yes.
Yeah. You know where it comes out. And that's about it, I think. Yeah. They covered everything. Oh, School for Boys. Oh, my God, I forgot School for Boys.
Oh, the Miskatonic version?
Yes.
Okay.
So School for Girls is deck building backwards. School for Boys, a game designed by Garrett Herger, is a social deduction game backwards.
Oh, really?
You play a Miskatonic horror who's going to school for human possession. And human possession final exam is you wake up inside of a human. So you don't know who you are. You don't know your special role, but everybody else does. And it's sort of like a gamer version of Guess Who. So it's like Guess Who with some stuff on it. Super fun game. I played this game at a game designer event called Unpub. We played one round at a table, and I offered to buy this and publish this game. Because if you play with fun people, you will have a blast with this game. I'm super happy with that.
Nice.
All right, and that's all of our
games. We're at Gen Con 50 currently. Is there any other conventions you're going to be at where people can come and meet you in person?
Oh, yeah. We're going to be at... there's an event in Harrisburg that I'm forgetting. We're going to be at PAX Tabletop in Philly. We're going to be at the Unpub event in Grand Rapids, Michigan, even though it's a huge hall. I'm a big supporter of the Unpub concept. It's a game designers come, they pay for a table. Game playtesters come up for free, they get in for free, and they give feedback. The big event in Baltimore is, 150 game designers. And I'm a huge fan of game design, and I want to promote that. And if someone wants to make a game, I love helping that process. So we're going to go all the way to Grand Rapids in November. I don't know if my car can make it there. And then I always go to MAGFest in January in D.C. I usually do a panel track there, but we'll have people there showing JRPG.
Nice.
Yeah.
Well, is there some social media places people can find you?
The best place to start is on our Facebook page. We also have a Twitter, Fun211, that's T-O-11, at Fun211. We're easy to find there. Or you can look for me personally at Twitter on L-P-E-T-E-R-S-C-H-M-I-D-T, Luke Peterschmidt, but with just the L. And you'll see all my stuff there, and Fun211's on Twitter as well.
Great. Well, thanks a lot.
Oh, thank you. It's great talking with you.
Hi, I'm here with
Lisa Steenson of Gutbustin' Games.
Can you tell me a bit about your games and your product?
The games, they are, there are four board games and a card game. And so these are games that they're fun, funny, and just a wee bit edgy. For example, Redneck Life, it's the player with the most teeth at the end that wins. Trailer Park Wars, oh, for God's sake. Is whoever can amass the most pink yard flamingo miniatures by managing well. Like you get Starla the chain-smoking stripper, she's 1 point, but if you can get the cigarette vending machine, she becomes two, so you collect two flamingos each time for that. Flea Marketeers, if you don't feel like you need a shower after you played, you didn't play hard enough. Cheap Shot is an insult-based rummy game. And Oh Gnome, you don't. You want to be the greediest little feisty, brawlingest gnome to gather the most gems for the end.
Nice. So on average, how many players did the game support?
They are kind of social games, of course, but if you get 3, 4, 5, 6 players, it's like more brawling, more conflicts. So... yeah, 2-player, just back and forth, not as much fun as, 4, 5, 6 players.
Yeah. Do you have any games coming out that you can talk about?
Yes, Dustin. Destin.
Destin.
Well, that looks like a D. Okay.
It does. My mom's weird.
Yeah. Yes, I'm making a kid's game called Gobs of Jobs. How can a kid get money? They work in the neighborhood. What types of jobs? And then once they get money, what's a wise thing to do with it? And we try to have a balance between saving, spending, and giving.
Oh, nice.
And then a card-based game, Creeps of Keister Island.
Can you tell me a little bit about that one?
Oh, it's a card-based game, and it... has Andy Hopp's art on it, and he makes really amazingly funny monsters. And you're trying to get your hand of four cards that are face down on the table to the lowest points by swapping out, peeking at your own, and spying at your neighbors. Because they're face down, you only get to look at two. And then through discovery, you're trying to swap out low, low cards. And when you think you've got the lowest set, you call Keister, which is French for end. That's a lie, actually.
Yeah, it's very to say.
And when you think you have the lowest, you call Keister. Everybody else gets one more turn, and then you flip your cards up. If you do have the lowest score, like a 7, a 4, you would get 0 points. But if somebody else had the lowest, then you would get all your points, a penalty of 5. They get 0. So it's pretty stressful.
I could see that. So we're currently at Gen Con 50. Is there any other conventions where people can come out and see you guys in person?
We are guests of honor at Con on the Cob, which is a massive 1,500 people convention, but it's super fun. We run like a party room with leg wrestling and butt darts and a cheese fountain, so you'll have some things, you know, to do there, gaming, and just that one, we just, it's just fun.
Nice.
And then we're from Portland, Oregon area, so the local cons like OriCon, GameStorm, and GeezerCon.
Yeah. Well, what about social media? Where can people find you online?
Facebook, Gutbusting Games with Facebook. And we tried Twitter. I don't get it.
I don't either. I understand that completely.
Yeah.
Well, thanks a lot.
Hey, thank you for stopping by and being patient.
Hi, I'm here with
Melissa Madigan.
Can you tell me a bit about your products and your company?
Yeah, so I'm with North Star Games. I'm here promoting Evolution, the video game. It's a video game that's based off of our board game. It's a strategy card game all about creating an ecosystem full of species that are just trying to survive. So there's a lot of food at the watering hole. You're trying to use these different traits and trait card combos to survive and thrive. But then sometimes there's some carnivores that might pop up, and you have to defend yourself against carnivores as well. So there's a lot happening in the game. There's a lot of excitement. So
yeah. So with a video game, is it going to be against a computer opponent, or is it going to be online?
Yeah, so we've built out a really good single player experience with a really great learn by playing tutorial. You're playing against up to 3 AI species, so we've got a lot of different challenges built in there. But the Kickstarter that we're launching next month on September 12th, that'll help us add additional things like challenges, in-game achievements, multiplayer, obviously, we know that's a big deal, and optimizing it for phones.
Nice. Is there, what platforms are you aiming for currently?
So we're aiming to launch next year, probably the first half of 2018, and we're going to launch on Steam, iOS, and Android. So we're hoping to have like a simultaneous release, if not like really closely released together.
Now, with the board game, if everybody knows the rules well, about how long does a game last?
The board game usually takes 45 minutes. But the video game, the great thing about that, you can play a full game of 7 or 8 rounds. It takes about 10 minutes.
Oh, really?
So it's very streamlined. You know, it takes away the hassle of having all the pieces. And, yeah, it goes by really quick, and you play. Replayability is great.
Was there any major problems with converting a board game to a
Because originally the team, when we started out, we built this game in-house, and they started out just doing it as a conversion, a complete conversion of the board game. But we wanted to do something different. We want to set a new bar in this industry and just make, you know, a video game and then appeal to both audiences. So that's where we just started redoing the artwork. We kept a little bit of the watercolor art that makes this game so great. The theme of Evolution is always the same, but you know, we just want to do something different and add those challenges and campaign modes in the game to make it something unique.
Nice. Well, we're currently at Gen Con 50. Is there any other conventions you're going to be at where people can come see in person?
Oh, yeah. We'll be at PAX West in like a week and a half, I think.
Oh, yeah. It's right around the corner.
We'll also be at PAX Unplugged this year, I believe it's the first one. And then next year we'll hopefully be at PAX South and PAX East.
Nice. What about social media? Where can people find you online?
Yeah, we're on Facebook, Twitter. Those are probably the two primary social media accounts. But we also have a blog at northstargames.com/digital. We've been keeping a blog going there with just showing off the artwork, the process of developing the game. And, yeah, you can get the best information there.
Well, thanks a lot.
Yeah, thank you.
Hi, I'm here with
Austin Brain of Brain Games.
Can you tell me a bit about your product and your games?
This is Alien Entity. You play as a group of scientists. One player is an alien. You don't know who that alien player is. So you either have to kill the alien or get off the planet by constructing a satellite array before the alien player infects everybody. You get past an infection card, you're on the alien's team and have to help the alien by sabotaging the satellite array because you only score points with the alien then.
Nice. So you actually switch teams.
You switch teams if you get past one of those infection cards. However, if someone's acting suspicious, there's the gun and the ammo, so you can blast them away.
So how many people does this game play?
It's 3 to 5 players, plays in about 5 to 15 minutes. But watch out who you kill, because if you kill a fellow human, they are out of the game and you get negative points. Then the game still goes on.
Nice. Do you have any other games that you're thinking about doing in the future that you can talk about?
You can still follow us, Brain Games, Brain with an E. We don't have anything yet, but we're always prototyping.
Nice. So we're currently at Gen Con 50. Is there any other conventions you're going to be at?
We are at Penny Arcade Unplugged in November.
And social media? How would people find you?
Facebook and Board Game Geek. Just search Alien Entity.
Great. Well, thanks a lot.
Thank you. We're available on Amazon.com and at all the conventions, and coming to some local game stores soon.
Hi, I'm here with
Craig Krempels.
Can you tell me about your company and your product a little bit?
Sure. This is Gold Baby Games, and this is our very first game that we're coming out with. It's called Drawing Dead. It's basically a poker variant where we've taken the bad parts about poker, where you fold and you're waiting and you're not playing, and we've gotten rid of them. To make it even more fun, we've incorporated roll cards into the game where it's sanctioned cheating. So you're going to be drawing extra cards, stealing chips from the opponent, stealing chips out of the pot, looking at other players' hands, things like that.
Nice. How many players does this hold?
It's a 2 to 4 player game.
If everybody knows the rules, about how long does a game generally last?
I would say a game would take 20 minutes to half an hour for 4 people. The 2-player version would go a little quicker than that.
Well, you mentioned this is your first game, kind of alluding that you might have other things down the line. Can you talk about any of them, or?
Well, sure. We have a dexterity flicking game that we're working on right now. It's super fun, but the game's creator is John Fiorillo, and he was integral in the creation of Ascension, which everyone's familiar with.
Oh yeah.
So this is his first project on his own, so you know it's going to be good.
Nice. We're currently at Gen Con 50. Is there any other conventions you plan on attending?
I don't know what John's future plans are for the game. I'm here helping him out this weekend, and I'm having a blast doing it.
Nice. What about social media? Where can people find you online?
If they look for Drawing Dead Game, you'll find us on Facebook and Twitter and things like that.
Great. Well, thanks a lot. Hi, I'm here with
Maddox Schuler of Keymaster Games.
Can you tell me about your company and your product?
Yeah, so Keymaster Games, we just got our start last year. We're a small independent publisher out of Athens, Georgia. Our first game, Control, is a light game. You're a time traveler trying to escape a rupture in time. And then Camping Creatures just released here at Gen Con, and it is a game where you're a mad scientist trying to capture mortals for their experiments.
Nice. So how many players do these games allow?
Yeah, so these are, Control's a 2 to 4 player game, and then Camping Creatures is 2 to 5 player, and they last about like 15 to 30 minutes, so lighter games, great games to play over a lunch break or a filler.
Nice. Can you tell me about any games you have in the works, or are they all hush-hush?
No, so like Flames of Gold is coming out on Kickstarter in October. That's a bit more of a game where it's a board game. These two games are card games. So that game, you're a miner, and you're trying to go out to the board and survey the land, build up your rig to mine the most gold from the land in a certain amount of time. And then we have another 2-player game coming out called Caper. And this game was originally titled It's Mine and released in Europe. And we have the U.S. and Canadian distribution rights, or publishing rights, I should say. And that means that we're going to be re-releasing that title with some new art. It's going to be called Caper. Under It's Mine, it won the Dice Tower Seal of Excellence. So we're excited to be able to offer that. It's a fun little 2-player drafting game where you're sending out your thieves to different parts of town and equipping them with like different kooky gear and stuff like that.
Can you tell me a little bit about the theme and the play mechanics of Control?
Yeah, so Control, you are a time traveler escaping a rupture, so that means you got to refuel your time machine. So every card has a certain fuel cell point value. So you could play it for its point value, or you could discard it to get its ability. And you're trying to weigh those decisions of when's the right time to build up my own area to get points, or maybe shut down other people by using these abilities that can, like, manipulate the board and what other people are doing.
Nice. Can you tell me a bit about Campy Creatures?
Yeah, so Campy Creatures, as a mad scientist, you don't want to do all the dirty work, so you're going to send out your creatures to capture the mortals. So you have a hand of creatures, but every player has the same hand of creatures. So you have perfect information on them, and you're trying to read what is that player going to do depending on what mortals are out that night. So maybe the damsel's out and she's worth 6 points, and then maybe a hunter's out and he's worth -3 points. You got to avoid those negative point cards. They're going to hurt you. So based on that, you're going to play two cards. You're going to play a card, and then the other player's going to play a card, and y'all both play cards face down and then reveal. And then whoever has the highest number gets first pick of the mortals out, so they probably choose the damsel. And then next highest is stuck with the -3. But abilities can throw things into the mix. So, like, some abilities allow you to give a mortal to another player. Some abilities allow you to see what other players played and then play your card. So as the round progresses, you're getting more information. You know that, oh, these players don't have these cards left in their hand. I can play around that. And so it's a lighter game too, but it's 20 to 30 minutes long, and you score your points at the end of the round and do that 3 more times, and whoever has the most wins the game.
Nice. Well, we're currently at Gen Con 50. Is there any other conventions you're going to where people can meet you in person?
Yeah, that's a great question. Currently right now, we're still figuring out our schedule, I'll say. So I hope we can be at some, and if you follow our newsletter, we'll let you know.
Speaking of newsletters, social media, how can people find you?
Great. Oh, awesome. Yeah, so keymastergames.com. That's where you can find news or updates or whatnot and sign up for our newsletter. But if you just go to any social media account, at Keymaster Games is where you can find us on Instagram, Twitter, all that good stuff.
Great. Well, thanks a lot.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Hi, I'm here with
Adam Splendorio from Cryptozoic Entertainment.
Can you tell me a bit about the company and your latest products?
The company, so Cryptozoic, is a sort of three-pronged company. We focus primarily on board games, but we also make trading cards, and we also make collectible figurines, like vinyl statues, collectible meeples. I wouldn't say primarily games, but I'm primarily games, so we treat all three equally. And here at Gen Con, we debut our newest games. We bring a lot of our fan favorites, and then we're here to demo them and, of course, unveil them to the public and get them into people's hands.
Nice. So what is your newest game?
Well, newest, we have two games here that we're making available to the public that aren't actually out until November. So it's a pretty early pretty early delivery for some people. And that is the DC Comics deck building game Confrontations, which takes the system that everybody knows and builds on what we did with a rival set, which featured Batman versus Joker. It's going to be a big box with 8 characters that can all battle each other, and you can also add the Joker and Batman from the other set into it, and that comes out in November.
Nice.
The other is the Rick and Morty Close Encounters of the Rick Kind deck building game. It would be the 4th Rick and Morty game we've done. Just last month, Anatomy Park came out. We've done Total Recall and the Mr. Meeseeks party game. And each one of the games is based on a single episode, finding the game within the episode, and each one is a different game genre. So we have a dice allocation party game. We have sort of a hidden character card game with Total Recall. Anatomy Park is tile laying, basically park building. You're building an amusement park inside a homeless guy's body. And then the deck builder. So we've got 4 different genres, 4 different episodes, 4 different types of games, and 4 different, mostly different sort of price points or barrier of entry.
Nice. Well, it seems like there could be a lot of expansion for something like that. Have you thought about more Rick and Morty games? Or?
Yeah, we're thinking about it all the time. So they keep making them. We can keep trying to find what the next great play experience is going to be from a particular episode.
Nice. Anything coming out soon that you can talk about, or is it all kind of hush-hush?
Well, 2018 is mostly hush-hush, so everything that we've got here is pretty much the major releases for the rest of the year. So in addition to that, being debuted here was the DC Comics Multiverse box. That was something that we've been working on for a while, and that is a one giant storage box called every DC deck building release, expansion, crossover pack, all in one set, one box, with dividers and plastic inserts and foam spacers. and a crossover packs with the content, all themed around the multiverse. So this is a great opportunity to introduce Red Sun Superman, Thomas Wayne Batman, locations from Flashpoint, and all. So, and that only comes with that box.
Nice. So is there any other conventions you're going to where people can try these games out in person?
Yeah, we should be at Board Game Geek in November, and it's one of our favorite shows of the year, and we'll have pretty much everything here. We'll have just released a couple weeks earlier to the whole public, so we'll have plenty available for there. We, of course, only had limited quantities for here because we had to airship them because they're all in various places on ships and things like that. So the nice thing is we'll have everything there at Board Game Geek.
Nice. So social media, where can people find you online?
Cryptozoic.com. We've got Facebook, Twitter. We've got all the conventional social media's presence, but our main website and Facebook's a great place to just keep up with our daily announcements.
Great. Well, thanks a lot.
Yeah, it's great to talk to you.
Hi, I'm here with
Matt Springer.
Can you tell me about your company and your product?
Company is Big G Creative. We're in Tennessee. We have four products. Shifty Eyed Spies is a party game up to eight players. Got a wink. The best winker in the house is going to win with somebody else. Wizard Always Wins is a light strategy game. And then Shifty Eyed... No, I just said Shifty Eyed Spies. How to Rob a Bank, which is illegal, but not in this game. There's no automatic weapons. You are either going to play as the bank or the robbers, and it's one versus one, one versus two, one versus three, so you can have a lot of robbers against just the bank. And our corner piece game is Bob Ross, Art of Chill.
Can you tell me a bit about that game? As a huge fan of Bob Ross, that kind of drugged me here.
That game, in the quickest form of explaining to you, is going to be you have to paint one of Bob's masterpieces quicker than Bob himself.
Oh, wow.
Through a series of collecting art supplies and technique cards. Not every color is going to be incorporated into a certain painting, nor will every single kind of brush or palette knife. And so you have to collect the right color combinations and technique cards to work your way around the board to get to chill status. And once you reach that, you win.
Nice.
So really it's a four-player game, but really five because you're playing against Bob, too.
Aha. With people who know the game, about how long does it take to play?
All the games are about a half hour, so they're good ladder games just in between. Obviously, those first couple outings might be more like an hour, but when you get in there, they really play 20 to 30 minutes.
Nice. Can you tell me a bit about The Wizard Always Wins?
The Wizard Always Wins is directly in the name. You get to choose up to seven of different characters each turn. Each character has a different action involved, and the object is there's a bag of fate, and the object is to get as many as of your colored gems in the bag of fate. And once you realize that you have a good odds of pulling your gem out of the bag, there are other things in there. There's other element tokens in there as well, so it's not going to be straight gems. But you have to be playing as the wizard, and if you pull your color out, then you win. Now, if you pull your colored gem out and you're the hunter or the oracle or the queen, it doesn't matter. You got to put your colored gem back in. So once you know that you have a good enough amount of gems in there, that's when you choose to be the wizard for that particular turn, because each turn you're a different character.
Nice. So, Shifty Eyed Spies, you mentioned something about winking. Can you tell me a little bit about that?
Yeah, it's a great party game, and you are working together with someone else, and what you're doing is, through a communication of really only your winks, you have a spy card in your hand, you wink to that spy, that spy has a delivery point, and so there are four locations on the board, be it the Metropolitan Station, cafe, fountain, or the newsstand.
Yes. And then
That spy, in turn, will then wink or eye gesture towards whatever location they have. And then once it comes around to your turn, then you say, I am meeting the blue spy at the fountain. Now,
okay.
With other players in the game, if somebody sees you sending signals, they can intercept. So if they intercept you, then they get the points in the cards. If you actually complete a mission with another spy, then you each exchange a card, be it the spy card or the delivery card. And the first to five wins.
Nice.
So it gets, it's best with more people. If you're terrible at winking, if you're terrible at eye contact, this is not your game. But, you know, maybe have a, you know.
It's a good way to build it, right?
Exactly.
So how to rob a bank? Can you give me a quick rundown on that one?
How to rob a bank is you're playing as either the bank or a bunch of robbers. And you can be, you're only ever just one person as the bank. You can have a group of people play as robbers. And you're trying to get bags of money into the getaway car. That's done through a series of action cards that you lay out. And you have to plan ahead. Everybody lays down, you lay down five cards total, each player. But you do it one turn at a time in the planning stage, each having a different action, be it make a move, tackle a guard, mace a guard, tackle a robber, lock a money bag, unlock a money bag, set the alarm. So the robbers are all working together, and they can't really converse too much, but they can kind of see what the other people's cards are being laid out as.
Nice.
Small footprint, good travel game.
So do you have any games in the works that you can talk about, or are they all hush-hush currently?
They're just more hush-hush. We're very new to the market. I mean, not even a month. Wizard Always Wins, Shifty Eyed Spies, and How to Rob a Bank have been in Target since August 1st.
Oh, nice.
We have an exclusive with Target for a year, and then Bob comes out on October 1st. Available pre-sale right now if you go to Target.com. We'll ship around mid-September, and it'll hit the shelves on the 1st of October.
So is there going to be any of the conventions you're going to be at recently where people can come see this in person?
Not scheduled right now. I would say this is probably it for the end of the year. And then it might be... Oh, that's right, Geek Girl Con. Yeah. When is that?
September 30th and October 1st in Seattle. We're going to be at Geek Girl Con.
Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you. Well, social media. Do you have any social media places?
Yes, you can go. It's all under the umbrella of Big G Creative. So Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, Big G Creative.
Great. Well, thanks a lot.
You're welcome.